Bringing Southern California together for nearly five decades. This is Spotlight on the Community on 95.5 KLOS. Now, Spotlight on the Community with Doug McIntyre.
Ladies and gentlemen, Congresswoman Jackie Speier from California, we've had on the show many times, talked about $15 million of settlements for sexual harassment claims against members of the House of Representatives. Now, she didn't articulate whether or not that was actual members of Congress or possibly some combination of members of Congress and staff members. But it's $15 million in settlements that apparently the taxpayers have been on the hook for. We don't know if there are private judgments above and beyond that.
That's our money?
Yes, it is. And that's just the House of Representatives. Doesn't talk about the Senate, which we're going to get to in a second. Meanwhile, Daryl Issa, Congressman Daryl Issa, we had on just this week, said it's time to name names. And we couldn't agree more. A few weeks ago, our very own Leanne Tweeden posted on social media, hashtag Me Too, and left it at that, as so many thousands and thousands of women have been posting Me Too in the aftermath of the Harvey Weinstein debacle. And today is the day that Leanne has chosen to actually tell her story and name names. Leanne, first of all, we're so proud of you. We're proud to have you on the show. It's been a pleasure working with you for this year. And today is the day that you have chosen to tell this story, really for the first time publicly. So let's start first. Who is your abuser?
Senator Al Franken.
So Al Franken, the senator from Minnesota. Now, the incident, as I understand it, took place prior to his term in office. He wasn't in the Senate when this happened.
Correct. It was in 2006. We were going on a USO tour. It was my ninth tour that I was going on, my eighth to the Middle East. A lot of people who know me know I'm a big supporter of our troops. That's something that's been my passion, my privilege for a long time. My husband is currently a pilot in the Air Force. My dad served in Vietnam. So this is something that's always been, you know, everybody gets behind something. That's what they love to support and do. And something that has been my passion has been supporting the troops. So that's what I've always given my time to. So that particular year, the sergeant major of the Army sponsored this tour, and Al Franken was the, you know, one of the headliners of the tour. And I was going as the MC, and, you know, I wasn't a singer or a dancer, so I go in MC since I'm a host. And since he wasn't a singer or a dancer, a musician, a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader that danced, he was also going to be a co-MC. So that was the first time I'd ever gone on a tour where somebody was going to co-host with me. But since he was an actor on SNL, and that's how a lot of people knew him and a lot of the kids in the crowd knew him, he was also a writer on SNL.
Yeah, principally.
He wrote skits for himself to do, and he brought a lot of props. And, you know, he did a Saddam Hussein skit, which was actually very funny that the troops enjoyed. And he brought, you know, facial hair and stuff that the prop department from SNL gave him, he said, and stuff like that. But when he introduced himself, when we met in Washington, D.C., before we all flew over, he said, oh, you know, when I found out you were coming on this tour, I wrote a little scene, if you will, with you in it, if you would like to do it with me, if you want to play along. And I said, you know, okay, fine, sure, that I'm game, you know, whatever. And, he gave me the script, and it, you know, it was full of sexual innuendos, and it was supposed to be funny, you know, because largely our military is young male men, and fine, okay, I can play along with that. And of course, there was a kissing scene that he wrote in for him to kiss me. And, you know, in my mind, it was never I was never actually going to kiss Al Franken.
Yeah, it was a comedy kiss.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was like in the vein of Bob Hope, right? He was going to come at me. I was either going to turn my head, or I would, you know, cover his mouth or whatever. It was like a gag thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So fine, whatever. So you're in country you're in theater for a couple of days. You go around, you entertain the troops, you meet them in where they work, and you sign autographs and stuff. So the day of our first show in Kuwait is where we started out before we went further into Iraq and Afghanistan. we were getting ready for our very first show. And so we're backstage, and because everybody else was either forward in the front of the stage doing, you know, setting up or getting ready to do, you know, waiting to go on or whatever, Al and I were backstage waiting to go on, and we had a little makeshift backstage area, which basically was the gym for these troops. And they had a little place cordoned off for us. And Al came up to me and he's like, well, we need to rehearse our kiss. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And I just blew him off, you know, because I'm thinking, we don't need to rehearse the kiss. I mean, we're doing a live, you know, 60-second skit in front of troops. We're not filming a movie, right? Right. And so I blew him off because I didn't think he was serious. And then he kind of said it again. He's like, well, we need to rehearse the kiss, Leanne. And I'm like, okay, Al, okay, you turn your head to the right. I'll turn my head to the right. Okay, we got this. And he actually got more, excuse me, I have to take a drink of water. I'm getting nervous. It's funny. As I tell this, I'm getting worked up and I'm shaking. But as he, it reminded me, remember when we played the Harvey Weinstein when the girl in New York actually wore the wire and we listened to him and the only audio we heard of Harvey Weinstein, and he was very aggressive and very
insistent.
Relentless.
Is just go up to the room with me. Just go up. Just go up for 5 minutes.
Yes, it was relentless. That's what I could hear in his voice, right? He started getting relentless, and I'm like, why is he insisting that we have to rehearse the damn kiss? I mean, it's just it's like a fake kiss, right? Yeah. This is all I could think about. I'm like, good God, Al, you know, it's not SNL, for goodness sakes, right? We're not doing this thing for real. This is just a live thing in front of troops. It doesn't matter, you know? And he's like, Leanne, you know, actors, we have to rehearse everything. You have to rehearse the kiss. And just to make it go away and to make him stop, I'm like, okay, well, rehearse the damn kiss, you know? And it happened so fast that as I'm like, okay, we're going to rehearse the kiss, you know, and as we're coming in, and I come in towards him, you know, we rehearsed the line and the line leading up to the kiss. We rehearsed the line and I'm coming towards him and he comes up and he grabs me and he puts his hand behind my head and he aggressively comes in and he mashes his mouth up against mine and he sticks his tongue in my mouth. And as it happens so fast and he puts his tongue in my mouth and his mouth is just wet and slimy. And to this day, I call him fish lips. Okay. Because it's disgusting. And it's like, and how I describe it in my mind is like when you're holding a treat for your dog, and I own a dog, and they're salivating while you're holding the treat. That's just what it reminds me of.
Well, it's an incredible violation.
Of course. And you know, my husband now was my boyfriend then. All I could think about is, why would somebody do that? He's married. I've got a boy. You know, it was just, I was violated. I was disgusted. That's not what I was expecting. All I could think about was, that's what you wrote that in the script for, so you could do that to me. I was angry. I wanted to punch him in the face. I mean, now, so many things were going through my mind.
Did you tell anybody about it?
No, I didn't. No. You know why I didn't tell anybody about it? Because it was the first date of our tour. What was I going to say? What was I going to say? No, I'm going to go out and introduce everybody else on the tour and not do Al Franken's part. I'm not going to go on stage for those 10 minutes when I'm standing next to him and he's the co-MC of the tour.
So
I'm going to be the difficult one.
You didn't report him to the USO rep or to the
Sergeant Major of the
Sergeant
Army?
Major of the Army.
No.
But you did tell some of the other cast members.
Yes. And you know, and as you're going along and you're in confined quarters, you know, you're all sort of, you know, you're not like you have your own room. It's not like you're in this luxury. You're not staying in a hotel.
It's close quarters on a tour.
Yes. You're staying in bunk beds and quarters with the other girls on the tour. And, you know, you don't want to be seen as the difficult one. You don't want to be the one that's, you know, causing trouble. You're in a war zone, for goodness sakes. There's people that you're being shot at every day outside the wire. Right. So I'm not causing trouble. I'm a big girl. I can take care of myself. I told him, you ever do that to me again, you're going to get punched in the face or kneed in the, you know what.
So, but a few minutes later, so you warned him, said, don't do that again.
Don't ever do that to me again.
Right.
And I walked out. I found the nearest bathroom. I washed my mouth out because I was so disgusted.
Right.
I mean, I was like, how dare you?
But a few minutes later, you're cued and you got to go on and perform the skit now in front of an audience.
And let me tell you, people think, oh, you're in Hollywood, you're a TV host, you're a sportscaster, you're an actress. I'm like, I am not an actress, okay? That's a whole different gift that people have. I've never claimed to be an actress. That's a whole other set of talent, right? I had to act. Okay, I had to go out there and put on that smile and act like I like this guy and act like, hey, Al Franken, ladies and gentlemen, and put on the smile and do the skit. And, you know, and let me tell you, I turned my head away every time. I never was alone with him again for the rest of the tour. I made sure that I was never alone in a room or anything with him again. I never spoke to him voluntarily again. You know, we had to sit next to each other. They put us next to each other in autograph tables, and just because we were the two hosts, and I would always put my back to him. And
how was he treating you after the backstage incident when he stuck his tongue in your mouth, mm-hmm. and then you rebuffed him, and you had to go out and do the fake kiss scene, which you didn't allow him to kiss you on stage. Mm-hmm. You turned your head. But now you're on the tour. What was his demeanor like with you in the intervening days?
You know, it's like that passive aggressive thing. I mean, I'm sure every woman has ever dealt with this. If you've, rebuffed a guy, right? You're in a bar and you're just hanging out with your girlfriend, or you have a boyfriend and a guy hits on you and you're like, you know, no thanks, I'm not interested, or I have a boyfriend or I'm married. And then, you know, a guy's been hitting on you for an hour, and then you say, I'm not interested. And then all of a sudden you're the bitch, or or you're fat and ugly anyways. I'm like, really? Okay. I'm just not interested. I'm sorry. And you're the bad guy. You're the one that's, you know, the evil woman. And it's like, it was that passive aggressiveness the whole tour. We're sitting doing autograph sessions. Literally, there are times nobody's in his line because, let's face it, you know, not that there's politics, but there are people that are, you know, patriots that go on these tours that people love. And sometimes there were no people in his line, and I'd have people out the door that would either have my FHM magazine, and I could see out of the corner of my eye one time that one of my headshots kind of was like moving away. And I looked over and I looked down. And I look down and he's like drawing on one of my pictures, and I have devil horns and a goatee and the devil tail and a pitchfork. And I'm just thinking, really, this is what I'm dealing with? Al Franken's drawing me as the devil. I'm like, okay, these are the little petty things I had to deal with for 2 weeks on the road.
Now, the tour comes to an end. You do all the shows. Mm-hmm. You go into the combat zones. Mm-hmm. And it's Christmas Eve, and it's time to come back to L.A.,
right.
And you're on a C-17, mm-hmm. about to make a 36-hour trip back to Los Angeles.
Yes.
You're exhausted. Everybody's burned out.
We're sick. I mean, you get the desert crud, they call it. I mean, right. Like, I've lost my voice from talking. You basically have the flu, and you feel like every bacteria and germ you're carrying back over. They call it the desert crud, literally.
So you're trying to get as much sleep on the flight as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And when you land back in L.A., the unit photographer hands you a souvenir disc, mm-hmm. of the photos from the trip. And everybody gets a copy of the disc.
Yeah.
Because they had a photographer following everybody around. So you get home, and after recovering from the trip, you pop the disc into your laptop to mm-hmm. take a look at the pictures. And what did you discover?
Well, funny thing is, so they take pictures of everyone, and what happens is that, you know, they sort of take all these behind the scenes, you know, pictures, and I open up my photo disc, and it's, you know, all the pictures from the tour, and I get to the pictures finally at the end, you know, because they're sort of in chronological order, and the picture of me on the, you know, the pictures of us on the plane ride coming home, I'm sitting there up against the side of the plane, asleep, still in my Kevlar helmet and my flak vest, because when you're taking off from a war zone, there's always the chance that small arms fire, basically a machine gun, could hit you from underneath and pierce the skin of the airplane. So you wear your tactical gear still in the aircraft taking off. So, you know, in case you get shot through the plane, that you still have, you know, protection.
Right.
So I'm wearing that. And of course, I can fall asleep in that for 9 hours. You know, I could probably wake up in Germany out of Bagram, Afghanistan, and still be in my gear because I'm asleep. And anybody that knows me knows I can sleep anywhere, anytime for a long period of time. And, I see a picture, and there's a picture of me sleeping in my gear on the plane. And there's Al Franken literally, in the photo, grabbing my boobs with his hands, as if he's grabbing my breasts, and looking at the camera and like smiling, laughing with this smirk on his face. And I'm like, after everything that happened on this tour, you know, in context, I mean, just looking at the photograph by itself, if you didn't know anything else that happened, it's still a disgusting photo.
By the way, the photo is posted now on our website at kbc.com. If you want to see the picture of Al Franken basically groping Leanne Tweeden while she's wearing a flak jacket and Kevlar helmet on a military transport, asleep coming from Afghanistan back to Los Angeles. It's at KBC.com, as is a written statement from Leanne that you all can read at your leisure.
But can I tell you, it's after everything that had happened to me and seeing that photo later, he knew that I wouldn't see that photo until I got home.
And so would everybody else on the tour, because the disc was given to everybody.
Sure. And, you know, and maybe it was just given to me and him. I don't know. But, you know, there were other people that were awake on that plane. And I'm sure there were other, obviously the photographer took it, and I'm sure other people were awake that probably were laughing at it. And maybe, you know, the photographer is probably just taking photos of everybody asleep. Mark Wills, another country singer, was sleeping next to me, so you can see part of him sleeping next to me. And it's probably one of those things where, you know, he thought, oh, hey, this is funny. You're taking a picture of Leanne sleeping. Hey, why don't you get this? And it's just that mentality that he thought he could get away with it and that it was funny. And then it's funny that you can grab someone's breast while they're sleeping and just think that, hey, I can get away with this. And that's that mentality that I'm like, that's funny, because, you know, when I opened that photo, when I got home, it was embarrassing. I felt belittled. I was ashamed. And I'm thinking, you know, I've had to live with this for 11 years. I wanted to come out and like release this photo and tell the world about it 10 years ago when I got home, and just be like, look at what Al Franken did long before he was a senator, long before, you know, anything. And
why didn't you? Why didn't you come out 11 years ago?
You know, I talked to Chris, my now husband, and you know, he's like, why? It's not worth it, you know, because, and I even thought to myself, if I do that, you know, back then it was way different. You know, the times were different. I was worried about my career, because people are going to go, oh, you're a model. You've been on the cover of Playboy. You're a lingerie model and a swimsuit model. And you're a sportscaster, and you're a girl in Hollywood. Who are they going to believe you? They're just going to bury you. They're going to look for all the bones in your closet. I mean, all, you know, it somehow it was going to be my fault. Somehow it was going to come down on me, and he was going to skate, you know, he was going to get off scot-free, and it was going to be, everything was going to come down on me, and it was just not going to be worth it. It was not going to be worth the fight. It was not going to be worth the hassle.
So now it's 2017, obviously after Harvey Weinstein, a lot of people coming from forward with stories, including our friend Lauren Savant.
Lauren Savant, Gretchen Carlson, you know, just in
all who we've had on the show,
yes,
of course.
Yes, and I think that's why. You know, obviously, it's always been in the back of my mind. I've tried to suppress it, but I've been angry about it. And you brought him up. I've seen him, like, you know, on the TV. I even saw him a couple years after that incident with my husband in full military gear at a USO gala. And I tried to hide from him in the VIP room, and my husband's trying to run, like, interference.
Well, the first time I noticed, I just mentioned when you first joined the show, I had been invited to the Gary Shandling Memorial, mm-hmm, here in L.A., and I sat in the same row with Al Franken, and I just happened to mention, because I had a wacky experience with him years ago that was not his fault, it was Lorne Michaels, actually, and I just mentioned that Al Franken was sitting in the same row, and when I mentioned his name, I did notice that you had this visceral reaction, your face kind of contorted into distaste. And I said, I don't know what that is, but there's some story there somewhere. And it's interesting to me because you have worked, you've been playing in the boys' sandbox most of your career. You've, mm-hmm, been working in the modeling business, in the sports arena as a host of Best Damn Sports Show,
Extreme Sports. Sports World.
You've been around baseball players in locker rooms. Has anybody else ever treated you like this?
No. Nobody's ever come up and grabbed me and just stuck their tongue in my mouth and feel like they
all
can get away with it.
Soldiers you've been around, all the military bases.
The soldiers have been the most well-behaved men I've ever been around in my life. Are you kidding me? They have a chain of command that they have to answer to. I've traveled with chairmen of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and sergeant majors of the Army. I mean, we're talking about some of the most well-behaved, because they know that they have to answer to people.
Now,
I mean, I think Al just thought, I don't have to answer to anybody.
Now, a couple weeks ago, we had Congresswoman Jackie Speier on the show. Mm-hmm. And this was another, you know, it's funny, when we do the show together, I see things out of the corner of my eye. When we were talking to Congresswoman Speier, and she told her story about having tongue stuck in her throat in Congress when she was a staffer. And I saw you again have this reaction.
I think I looked at you and I go, was it Al Franken? Yes. I mean, I think I mouthed the words to you. I'm like, was it Al? You know, I mean, it was just one of those things where I didn't have an epiphany, but I thought, oh my gosh, it happened to her too. And I think that maybe I talked to you during the break. I said, it happened to her too. You know, how many other people has it happened to? And maybe, you know, everybody's asking me why now? Why now? And I said, you know what? Okay. The tide has turned. So many people have come out. And I've wanted to tell this story because it's bugged me for so long. It's made me angry for so long. I've been humiliated for so long. My friends have known. My husband's known. You know, the people around me have known the story. My assistant knew the story. And everybody's like, oh, my gosh, are you going to show the picture? Are you going to finally talk about it? And it's like, now's the time. Because what if there's somebody else he's done this to? What if somebody, I was inspired by Jackie Speier saying, you know what, this happened to me when I was a young 20-something, being a congressional aide, and that happened. If I'm talking about it, maybe somebody else, it will feel like they can come out in real time and not hold it in for 10, 12, 20, 30, 50 years, that some of these people are coming out 40 years later saying, this happened to me when I was a teenager or whatever. You know, this now is the time. Don't wait. Don't hold it in. You know, we got to change the culture. We got to change the silence.
What do you want from Al Franken?
I don't want anything from Al Franken. I don't want anything. He's had a chance. I told you, I've seen him since this happened. He knows exactly what he did. He's had a chance to apologize. I don't even want him to. If he feels like he wants to apologize to me, he can do that. That's fine. I'll take his apology. I'd have been long dead if I held my breath waiting for an apology from him for 11 years. Okay. I've lived my life. I've moved on beyond that and past that. He can apologize if he'd like to, but I don't need anything from Al Franken. I've moved beyond that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Leanne Tweeden's story in its entirety is posted at KBC.com, as is the photograph taken on that USO tour from 2006. Leanne, we're very proud of you. We're proud to have you as part of the show.
You're listening to Spotlight on the Community on 95.5 KLOS. I'm Doug McIntyre. Make sure you listen to McIntyre in the morning, weekdays 5 to 10 on Talk Radio 790 KBC AM.
95.5 KLOS.
Spotlight on the Community now resumes with Doug McIntyre.
At the top of the agenda is tax reform. And some of the proposals that we have seen from the House bill anyway would be a poison pill for many of us here in California across party lines. To talk to us about this right now is one of the Republicans who has said, no, I don't think so. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Congressman Daryl Issa. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. I just stepped out of an interview with the Attorney General, and sometimes in Washington you have to look at criminal justice and tax reform in the same week.
Actually, let me pick your brain on that just for a second, because we did obviously just mention that there may be an investigation into the Clinton involvement, Clinton cash, etc. And the president has repeatedly said, why isn't Congress investigating blah, blah, blah? And I've been asking for 6 months, he's the president. Why doesn't he order his attorney general to do an investigation?
Well, these are the questions being asked to the attorney general. This is his first official coming before the House Judiciary Committee. And it is a absolutely important question. The so-called Russian probe is being handled by an independent prosecutor who is obviously expanding and looking throughout a great breadth, and that's fine. But the other side of that coin is clearly off the map for Mueller, and there's a conflict of interest. He served and would have the same problem as Comey. They've sort of already made up their mind. So you need somebody who hasn't made up their mind for or against former Secretary Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, the Uranium One issues, to investigate. And whether it's a U.S. attorney assigned the job, a career U.S. attorney, or a special prosecutor, it doesn't matter to me. What does matter is that we have to have accountability, and we don't seem to have it in the case of those allegations. And by the way, if those allegations are not true, if that this is, quote, if you will, fake news from the right, great. Let's just dispel it and move on.
I couldn't agree more. The American public deserves answers on these questions. The Russian meddling in the 2016 campaign and the source of millions and millions and millions of dollars of contributions into the Clinton Foundation and the high speaking fees that former President Clinton got while Mrs. Clinton was Secretary of State. If it's not true, by all means, we should have her name cleared on this. But if it is true, there needs to be accountability. And we haven't had it. We've just had a partisan fight that only divides us further. And the only way we're ever going to lance this boil is to put the facts before the country and let the people see what the evidence is.
Well said.
All right, let's move to why we actually come on board, which is everybody in the state of California has got an interest in how this tax bill comes out of Congress, because if we lose the deduction for home mortgages and interest payments and state income tax and divorce settlements and college tuition, and you look at this, and, if, you know, I like cutting taxes, but from this perch, it sure looks like the high tax states are being asked to pay for the tax cuts that will go to the large corporations.
Well, let's not even go to the large corporations, because economic activity is scored to be roughly equal to the cost of lowering those taxes. If you will, that's the Laffer curve at work, that if you take less off the backs of people who are investing, and they invest more, you'll get more economic activity and get more revenue. So I actually approve of trying to get our tax rate for companies and small businesses alike in line with the rest of the world, not at the absolute top. But just to give you a number, because I think as Californians, and I'm sworn in as a California representative, if you live in Mississippi, which is a fairly low tax state, you get $2.50 for every dollar that you send to Washington. About the same true of West Virginia and Alabama. Even Tennessee, which, by the way, has no income tax, gets back around $1.50, $1.40 for every dollar it sends in. California roughly sends the amount in that it gets back. But we are the 10th best when it comes to paying money into the Treasury and not getting as much back, along with Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Minnesota, all high-tax states. And what we're seeing here is, if you do not count, and then by the way, if that's with our deduction for our state income tax, if you take that out, all of those states, those high tax states, which, you know, we're not alone, Minnesota and Massachusetts and New York and so on, we will in fact be even greater donors to the other states like Tennessee and Mississippi that actually are net recipients. So when we look at the balance between the states, we're already a giver, not a taker, and this tax change will make us a much larger giver. We're not going to get more money back from the state, from the federal government. And that's the point, is the balance is already pretty bad when you look at states like ours not getting as much back from the government as we send to the Washington. And that includes, you know, pay on military bases. We're not just, it's not like direct money. It's all money being spent. And when you get down to New Mexico and Mississippi and West Virginia, they're practically shoveling it in with your tax dollars. So I'm trying to maintain a balance that is already unfair to California. We're a rich state and a net donor. I do not want to be in a position where we simply teeter it more toward other states with a tax policy they like and voted for.
We're talking with Congressman Daryl Issa, who you can follow on Twitter at Daryl Issa. Congressman, did the designers of the tax plan create it so that it basically punished the blue states, with the idea being, look, they can't lay a glove on us because in the Electoral College, we're not going to win New York and California and Illinois anyway, or Massachusetts, so we can stick it to them, and what difference does it make?
You know, I don't think it is, but I do think it's an example of green eye shades thinking things are okay. I talked to former Congressman Chris Cox of Orange County the other day, and he's quite a constitutional scholar, a brilliant attorney, and he said it better than I could say it. The first principle of the United States of America is that we, the states, if you will, take the money first. We have the responsibility for everything except a limited amount of things in Washington. And so the first principle that you can't tax me on that which my state has already taken away from me for the same purpose is a principle that should be upheld. We're not, you know, candidly, I don't need my property tax to be deductible or my private school tuition or any of these other things which are at least discretionary. But the idea that you would say that if you make $80,000 and the state takes 10 of it, that you still have $80,000 to be taxed on, you don't. The state has taken that 10. You are now being taxed on the 70 remaining. I don't want to tax credit, but I certainly don't want to be taxed on the same income twice after some of it's gone.
Well, that's exactly the point. It is double taxation. And the problem is that if the plan stays as is, and the politics stays as is, the homeowners in California, it's already, I mean, it's so difficult to afford housing in this state as it is. I don't know how this does anything but make the market either more untenable or crater it as people realize they've just been priced out.
There's no question at all that by taking the state tax deduction, it's much worse than taking, if you will, the home mortgage deduction, which they're also taking part of, and some of the others, because this crosses everyone. The person who cannot yet afford a house is going to be hurt by higher taxes. You know, they keep saying, well, if you don't itemize, and you know, what they're really saying is at the fairly close to the bottom end of the market, middle to bottom, you may get a benefit. But as you succeed enough to buy a home in California, you, in fact, will be hurt.
Congressman, let me ask you one more question about this. And this is an essay question, so you can take a shot at it, if you will. But, you know, we've been doing this a long time. And when we talk about whether we talk about national issues, state issues, or local issues, the answer is always we don't have enough money for fill in the blank. A bunch of years ago when O'Connell was superintendent of public instruction in the state of California, we had him on the show and we asked him, in a perfect world, if I could wave a magic wand and give you every dime that you would want to run a perfect public education system, K through graduate school, how much would you want? And the answer basically was more. And the reason I bring this up is because we have this huge, enormous, gigantic deficit that is like an astronomer's number in the trillions. And yet everybody complains that we've inadequately funded whatever it is that they're involved in. Everybody's unhappy about the level of funding for everything, infrastructure, social welfare programs, a military budget. And I just don't know how it's possible we could be trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in debt and we're still unhappy.
Well, I think the easiest answer to that is again, a first principle point. We fund so many things, so many trillions of dollars of things which are not a requirement for the federal government to be involved in. And that includes things like the Affordable Care Act. The question is, if the federal government only did that which is mandated and looked to the states and says, yes, we could do it, but why take your money round trip to Washington? You tax your people appropriately for these other things which are not the military and other things that must be done at the federal level. Yes, there'd be a lot of wonderful programs that people love, including help for our K-12 schools. But there really is a question of if the government got out of its 11% of the typical school budget and said, you know what, we're not going to give you a penny anymore. You raise your taxes to do it. The question is, would the people in Sacramento love their kids as much if it cost them that 11% budget more, or would they find efficiencies, or would they do a combination of the two? And if Sacramento just for once let it come down to the county level and allowed the counties effectively to keep their property taxes and make those decisions, would they love their children well and be tighter on the budget? And that's the basic question of how much are we doing too far away. And the further away it becomes, the less people are attached to being frugal with your money. I don't expect the military ever to be efficient because we demand that they be 100% effective. So I understand waste in military around the world. But you know what? We do a lot of things which we know are done more effectively when they're done at the community level than they will be when they're done at the national level.
Congressman, as always, thank you for your time. We appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Congressman Darrell Issa. This is a sensational piece of local reporting by the Long Beach Report, lbreport.com, and we give them props for this. The L.A. County Sheriff's Department effectively acknowledged that under its current jail criteria, a person arrested for a misdemeanor in L.A. County, charged by a prosecutor, convicted or pleads guilty in court, and is sentenced to the maximum term a judge can impose for most individual misdemeanors of 180 days in jail, is effectively released the same day. They serve minutes in jail.
You just have a revolving door, literally.
Let's talk about this with the publisher of the Long Beach Report, Bill Pearl. Bill, good morning, sir. How are you?
Thank you, Doug. I'm well, and thanks for having me on.
Well, this is a doozy of a story. We covered the tortured trail of then-city councilman Richard Alarcon, the mustache, out there in the San Fernando Valley. Who was living, was convicted of basically lying about what district he was living in. And he ended up spending literally 15 minutes in jail. But now we're finding out that this is apparently a systemic problem where basically if you get a misdemeanor, a sentence of 180 days or 6 months, you don't serve any time.
Well, when we started looking into this, I thought this was an outlier, an anomaly. I couldn't understand what happened when it did happen. And what apparently happened was on October 30th, a man was walking with his two daughters along 2nd Street in Long Beach, here, an upscale part of town called Belmont Shore, and they found themselves confronted by a man who physically attacked the father. And the Long Beach PD told us that when officers arrived, they observed the man yelling and screaming. They determined that he'd confronted the dad and his two daughters, struck the father in the face. There was a struggle between the two. A witness came, helped the dad until police arrived. The police took the alleged assailant, a 39-year-old man, into custody. They booked him for battery, and the Long Beach City Prosecutor's Office, which handles misdemeanors here, charged him with misdemeanor battery. And on November the 2nd, at his arraignment, he pleaded guilty. And the judge did just as you said, imposed the maximum possible jail term for the single misdemeanor offense, 180 days in jail for that crime. And then we determined, just by searching the L.A. County Sheriff's Department website, that he was released the same day as the judge sentenced him to serve the 180 days in jail. So we emailed the L.A. County Sheriff's Public Information Unit. No great reporting here, although it was nice of you to credit me with all of that. We emailed them and sought comments to find out what happened, if there are similar outcomes that could happen again, and what measures the sheriff has in place to avoid that. And we got back an email from the Sheriff's Information Bureau, who emailed us as follows, quote, "At this time, the Los Angeles County jail criteria indicates that if someone is arrested for a misdemeanor and is sentenced to 180 days or less, then they are released that day," unquote. So, again, I was just thunderstruck by this, and I did a little checking around, and we learned that the Orange County Sheriff's Department applies a very different policy in which those found guilty serve their sentences, but they get one day of credit if they behave for each day served. They sent us that by email, and we asked the Ventura County Sheriff's Department for their protocol, and it's basically the same. They get credit for half of the sentence if they behave while incarcerated. So it is, as best I can determine, based on what the Sheriff's Department told us, in L.A. County, that would be not just in Long Beach, but from Pasadena to Palmdale, Santa Monica, and L.A., looks like a person who is arrested, charged, prosecuted, tried, convicted, sentenced by a judge to half a year in county jail for victimizing some poor person with a misdemeanor crime is released from jail the same day they're sentenced. And as W.C. Fields might say, it baffles science. That's kind of where we are at this point.
Well, I beg to differ that this isn't great reporting, because while you maybe only asked a few questions and they sent you the information, you thought to ask those questions, and these are questions that are news to us. So well done. This is all the you know what flows downstream, right? There's an old expression about that. And this is all the result of realignment, AB 109, Prop 4757. as we're pretending that we're not emptying the state prison system, what we're doing is we're filling up the county jails, creating an overcrowding crisis at the county level. And then the county is trying to deal with their issues by emptying the county jails. And basically, I mean, you can violently attack somebody and be out the same day. It's really outrageous. Great piece of reporting. Thank you for talking to us about it. I have a feeling we'll be talking to you again. LBReport.com. LB Report stands for LongBeachReport.com. The publisher, Bill Pearl. Bill, thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. Just real quickly, Doug, this is a countywide story, and the first and to date the only person to pursue this has been Doug McIntyre at KABC Radio, and I'm really glad you're giving this some attention. Thank you.
All right. Joining us right now is candidate for governor of California. He also happens to be a California Republican assemblyman, and he is leading the charge for a gas tax repeal. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Travis Allen. Good morning, Mr. Allen.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
I appreciate it. So, again, we know the process by which this gas tax was passed, and it comes down to essentially legalized bribery, that there was a stunning sum of money, $500 million just into one part of the state, to essentially find the price at which people would support a bill that is has a negative impact on their constituents' lives.
Without a doubt. Look, I mean, this whole thing stinks from the very beginning. In 2010, Jerry Brown was elected on a very simple campaign promise: no new taxes without voter approval. But that is exactly what he did when he raised all of our gas taxes. He pushed it through the legislature. And as you mentioned, he bribed not just one legislator. He bribed four legislators, a total of $1 billion. And yes, one of them did get a full $500 million for his district. This was really just to sweeten the pot and to buy their votes. So now we have the highest gas prices in the nation, thanks to Jerry Brown's deal.
And, you know, what's so demoralizing about this, it's not just the fact that we're getting murdered at the gas pumps again and car registrations and all the other things. But the gas tax hike, as it was written, is pinned to inflation. And yet it's in itself creates inflation because it increases the cost of transportation, especially in diesel fuel, for everything that goes to the market. So we use public money to pass a law that takes more public money, that generates inflation, that creates higher gas taxes, to take more public money.
You know, I couldn't have said it better myself. And really, here is the real insult to injury. Here's the salt in the wound. In Los Angeles, we get stuck in an average of 104 hours of traffic every single year in L.A. County alone. Across California, the average is only slightly lower at 90 hours per year. Keep in mind, this is the highest number anywhere in the United States of being stuck in traffic. Not one penny of this $52 billion payday for Jerry Brown and all of his cronies in Sacramento, not $1 can be used to build any new freeways or expand freeway capacity anywhere in the state of California, because built into this bill is something called the road diet, which literally says you cannot increase lane capacity. So what that means is, if you don't like being stuck in the worst in the nation traffic right now, literally, you probably like it even less now that you're paying an extra $2.50 every time you fill up your tank.
We're talking with California Republican Assemblyman Travis Allen, who is, by the way, a candidate for governor. The gas tax repeal movement, where does that stand, and what's the likelihood of success?
Likelihood of success is 100%. So where we stand right now is, I went down and filed a ballot initiative, and the ballot initiative was as simple as it comes. Literally, it's about five words. The following code sections are repealed, and we struck out the 37 pages of law that is Jerry Brown's SB1, largest ever gas tax increase and registration fee increase. Keep in mind, that goes in on January 1st. So the repeal just strikes out the law. But what happened was, is after I filed it, 65 days later, the attorney general brought me back a title and summary. And you would imagine this would say that this is the repeal of the gas tax. This is what you see on the papers when you sign it in front of the grocery store or in your polling booth. The problem is, he came back with a title and summary that was so misleading, so prejudicial, didn't even mention the word tax or fee in the title. So we took him to court. We sued him in Superior Court. We just beat him. The judge actually said that his definition and his title and summary was so egregious that literally the judge took it out of his hands, rewrote it himself, and ordered him to use the judge's definition. Now, Javier Becerra, the attorney general, is appealing that decision. So we are now in state appellate court, where we're hoping to win later this month and finally get the petitions out on the street so we can get the 366,000 signatures we need to get this on the November 2018 ballot.
We're talking with Travis Allen. The irony is this went through with, well, there were certainly people complaining about it and upset about it, but the last time we saw car registration fees go up, it ended up with a recall of Governor Gray Davis. Has California, in your opinion, have we moved so far to the left that this actually might be embraced? Because we know that, for instance, the voters in California approve just about any measure that's framed in terms of helping the environment. And that's certainly one of the reasons that Jerry Brown has argued for this.
No way, no how. Look, Jerry Brown and literally the California Democrats want to try to sell this to the California people. But they just did another poll. Poll came out, said over 54% of Californians would repeal this gas tax if they were given the choice right now. And that was just done by LA Times USC. So, you know, we here in California know that we have to drive to get places. You know, this is not like, you know, New York City where you can just hop onto the subway or, you know, Washington, D.C. or something like this. We need our cars to get around. And if we need our cars, we're going to have to buy gas. And we also know that none of this gas money is going to go to fix any of our freeways, I mean, in terms of expanding them and getting us out of the worst in the nation traffic. You know, I don't know about you, but if you ever get stuck on the 405 any time of the day, literally, I mean, you're putting on an extra 30 minutes on your drive time, and that's if you're lucky. The point is that Californians know that this tax is way too much, that only 35% of this money will ever literally get spent on our roads in any capacity, and not one penny will get spent on expanding our freeways. People know that, look, we were sold a bill of goods, and we didn't even get a chance to vote on it. And that's the part that has people so upset, which is exactly why we're going to repeal the gas tax.
Travis Allen, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about it. I have a feeling we'll be talking to you a few more times.
You better believe it. So listen, if any of your listeners out there want to help out, there's a website. It's nocagastax.com. Again, that's www.nocagastax.com. Go on the website, sign up to volunteer. If you mail in five, if you donate $5, we'll even mail you your own petition with your, you know, postage paid return address envelope and space for 23 voters to sign on it, because we need a total of 366,000 voters to sign to get this on the November ballot. But I'm telling you right now, not only are we going to repeal the gas tax, but we're going to change governors in 2018, which is why I'm running to be the next governor. And things are going to change here in California for the better.
This has been Spotlight on the Community, 95.5 KLOS. I'm Doug McIntyre, Talk Radio 790 KBC AM.